Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Over 100 years, Gillette has stood with men through early mornings, late evenings, and everything in between. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Game on 2FM.
And you're welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Coming up on the show, Mark Langdon on European football, including the latest on what appears to be a tragic story, yet another one developing in Cardiff. Nigel Carlin on life at Connacht this season as the province confirmed contract extensions for the coaching team. And Gary Murphy and Greg Allen on Shane Lowry, the return of Tiger Woods this weekend, and all things golf. 51552 is our text number at Game On 2FM if you want to get in touch on Twitter. And Gary Murphy is with me in studio. How are you doing, Gar?
Very well, Hugh. Thank you.
You're just back from the scene of Shane's triumph. How did you find it the week overall?
It was brilliant. It was it's a Rolex Series event again, or first time, so huge purse. A lot of pressure on guys starting out with the first event for such a huge event, and to be there to witness it live was just amazing.
I'd say it was. And I'd say you, like most other Irish people, shouting and roaring for Shane, thought at the turn or even just after that it was gone, that everything was gone, and then he'd no chance of getting back.
Yeah, I was kind of saying that in commentary. He's a bit like Harrington. They don't do it easy. Like, they just never, you know, soldier on and win by 4 or 5. And so there's always a little bit of drama, and it was just brilliant to have the lead and to lose it and come back and win it the way he won it, and to be there. And my best mate's carrying from it. It was
pretty special.
Yeah.
How was Bo?
He's good. His he was phenomenal afterwards. His back was a little bit sore yesterday. He's a bit of a dodgy back, and kind of played up on him yesterday. So hopefully he'll be okay for Thursday. But It's an ongoing issue with him, and he's done a ferocious amount of training just to try strengthen it up. So hopefully he'll be all right.
Just before we were going to talk about this later on with Greg, but I got a sense that there was an awful lot of Irish support there for Shane. Was that
huge? Yeah,
really.
Loads of Offaly jerseys.
Really,
it was class. Like, and loads of GAA jerseys. Loads of expats out there. Quite a few South Africans as well. And there was a good atmosphere. I mean, they were obviously, Sterney was flying, so. Mm-hmm. They were up for it, and then it was like being in Croke Park. Like, it was mad. There's just loads of roaring the ball.
Interesting dynamic between the two, I thought, as they walked around. You know, obviously Sterney had that phenomenal front line, and he must have been thinking, today is my day. But then at the end, it did look like, when Shane hit that incredible three wood into 18, that Sterney turned around and said, great shot. But he said something to Shane, and Shane kind of smiled. So I presume it was some kind of compliment, you know?
It was played in a great atmosphere between the two of them. You know, they were just going at it, and, you know, if you play better than me, and that's what I like about golf. You know, the better player wins, and that's it. There's very little skullduggery in Europe. Then you look at the PGA Tour on Sunday night, and the way Mickelson reacted when Long won, which was, you know, just the ultimate Hail Mary victory.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a better atmosphere in Europe. There's no denying there's a couple of lads and there's a bit of needle there, but between Shane and Richard, it was a great atmosphere to play in.
Yeah, we had news just to turn to rugby. We're going to talk golf with Greg and Gary, as I said, later on. So any questions for the lads, let us know. 51552. Ulster Rugby have banned a spectator for life from the Kingsman Stadium following an investigation into verbal abuse aimed at Simon Zebo during the Champions Cup match against Racing 92. So if you aren't aware of what happened, Zebo tweeted after the game, "I hope my ears deceived me with some comments directed my way from the crowd. Hashtag not on. Django wins in the end." Basically, Ulster went to have an investigation, a very thorough and speedy investigation in the aftermath of this. They have banned a spectator for life. They have written to apologise to Simon Zebo and released a statement as well. So exactly the reaction that you would hope comes from a club in this kind of situation.
Yeah. And it's surprising, I have to say, really, especially for rugby. Thought they were all too posh for that.
Yeah,
obviously not you.
No. I mean, look, but decisive action, though.
A great reaction. Absolute gobshite, really. But
yeah,
good news.
Yeah, really good news. And Simon Zeebo as well, just on Twitter earlier today, just saying thank you to Ulster Rugby for how quick and how decisive they were in everything that happened. So that's the way you want to see things stamped out. I did see as well, before we talked to Mark, that Tomás O'Shea says Kerry won't be contenders for the 2019. Sam Maguire, that, you know, too many positions that are question marks over, too much to build on. Peter Keane has a lot of I mean, come on. This is like, come on. It's every year. No, we haven't a hope.
Like the Dubs winning five in a row. I mean, I know 100% from the Kilkenny side with Tipperary. Like, we could not have lost to a worse county going for five in a row. And it's the very same in football with Dublin and Kerry.
Yeah.
They will do absolutely everything to stop Dublin doing that.
Yeah, okay. 51552 is our text number, by the way, at GameOn2FM if you want to get in touch on Twitter. Just some pretty harrowing news, really. There's no other way to describe it. Police carrying out the search for the missing light aircraft that had a British Premier League club, Cardiff City's record new signing, Argentina-born striker Emiliano Sala, on board, have found a number of objects floating in the water. Confirmation came in this morning that he was indeed on board that plane. And the police have subsequently this evening at 5 p.m. called off their search overnight because conditions have become too hazardous. This is the chairman of Cardiff City, Ken Chu, speaking about the incident earlier today.
We are very shocked when we heard about the news. We expected Emilio to arrive last night into Cardiff, and today was his first day with the team. When we heard about the plane which has gone missing, we were very shocked, and it caught all of us off guard, you know. And our owner Vincent and our chairman, they're all very distressed about the situation. We just hope that they could find a plane and find Emilio and the pilot, and we still continue to pray that we have some news of him. And we call off training today because everybody is not in a frame of mind, and everybody is praying for Emilio, and everybody's in shock status at this point in time, including myself.
Yeah, so there you go. That's the Cardiff City chairman speaking earlier today, and you can hear the obvious shock in his voice as well. So the Argentina forward, 28 years of age, if you're just not aware of the background as well, signed for Cardiff City from FC Nantes last week for a club record fee of €17 million. He had played for in France since 2012, so a big move for him, a big move for the club as well, who are struggling in the relegation zone at the moment. And Mark Langdon, football editor with the Racing Post, is on the line to talk a bit more about this. Hi, Mark.
Good evening. You okay?
Yeah, not too bad. So, look, it's a pretty shocking story. Obviously, everyone's still hanging on to the hope that we're going to get some positive news out of this, which looks increasingly unlikely, given the conditions, given how cold the temperature is outside, and particularly in the water as well. But give us the background into how the Cardiff City came across this guy and how the whole signing happened in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, Salah had been in France, like you say, for you know, virtually all of his professional career, really. Even though he's Argentinian born, he came over, played for Bordeaux first of all. Then he kind of knocked around a few clubs on loan, didn't really work out for too many of them, and then it's at Nantes where he really has made his name. He scored a lot of goals for Nantes, particularly this season under Haliodzic, the veteran coach, who was a striker himself and was I think a bit like Solskjaer and Rashford, really was sort of working with the forwards to make them better, and Salah was getting on the end of lots of crosses, target man, centre forward. It's quite ironic, really, because I was actually doing a radio show back in about October time, and a question came in from a Cardiff fan and said, who can we realistically look to buy? And I mentioned this guy as somebody that really would be my number one choice if I was Cardiff, because he suited their style of football. Didn't surprise me when Cardiff did spend the money that they did on him, and this is just a harrowing story. A lot of in Nantes tonight there, vigil going on, and there's a lot of people out on the streets, which I think goes to show the kind of impact that, that Salah made on the club.
Absolutely, yeah. And as you say, I mean, Andrew mentioned the story to me earlier on about a producer spotting him quite early on in the season back in October and the interview for Talk Sport. And you must have been, I suppose, pleasantly surprised when you heard the news that he was going to Cardiff, Mark.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, because I'd followed his career, like I said, mainly this season, because the goals have been going in and, you know, you, anybody that scores that amount of goals, you start, you know, people want to know about them. And I sort of watched him a few times. And like I say, that he was definitely suited to British football and a Neil Warnock team, if you like, because that's the way that he kind of likes to play his football in Cardiff. You know, are not going to be Barcelona, are they? You know, they're going to play long, get crosses into the box and that kind of thing. So it was, yeah, I don't know if Neil Warnock was listening to the show that night and had a tip-off. But, you know, it definitely, I think Aliotic, this is the key. And, you know, there are some managers out there that think that, you know, strikers, it's an instinct and you can't teach it. I mean, Jose Mourinho's one that said that of Marcus Rashford, you can't teach it. They've either got it or they haven't. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer disagrees with that, and I think Aliotic was kind of in the Solskjaer camp in that he worked with the forwards, getting them into better positions, you know, working on their finishing, and it definitely worked for Salah. And you know, because it was such a move that only just happened to Cardiff, I don't think the impact is more felt in France, I think, than it is in British football at the moment.
What's your own view on that, Mark? It's an interesting one. I understand the, I suppose, having an innate talent or an innate sense of positional awareness as a striker, particularly in where the ball might end up. But surely it's not rocket science. Surely you can coach someone who's willing to learn.
Oh, I would have thought so. I mean, you know, the practice, I mean, you have to have a certain amount of talent to get, you know, so far in professional sport. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But, you know, why does a golfer continually practice their putting or driving or whatever? And it's the same with strikers. You practice, and just a tiny bit of help, even if it's only gets 1% more out, you know, it's better than nothing. I mean, I've been to sort of Tottenham training sessions, and Harry Kane is absolutely relentless in training, and then he goes out on the pitch, and you know, more often than not, the ball goes exactly where he wants it to, and you know, he works with with people as well at Tottenham, and I definitely think that you can get you know, a couple of percent. Like I say, I think there is a natural talent that, you know, you've either got it or you haven't. But you can definitely learn. And I think even somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, will probably learn. You know, I mean, you know, that free kick that he takes, for instance. I mean, yeah. You know, that's not just something that he dreamt up one day to take a free kick like that. That's practice, probably watching somebody like Juninho, who used to play for Lyon, the way he used to strike it. And you know, I think you definitely can. I think it's a little bit lazy to suggest that you can't, and probably a failing of the coaches there that don't believe you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, just let's go through some other news around here, but I want to stay in England if we can for the moment. Dele Alli is the latest injury casualty for Spurs, Mark. He's got a hamstring injury, so I think a few weeks is the prognosis there. Obviously Harry Kane is also on the treatment table at the moment, so it's not a great time of year for this to happen, if there is a good time.
Well, even worse with Heung-min Son away at the Asian Cup, and Tottenham thought they were going to get away with it at one stage today when Bahrain equalised against South Korea before South Korea won that game in extra time. So Son will be missing for another couple of matches. I think this is a real hammer blow to Tottenham. You know, to already be missing, you know, that they're two frontline players in Kane and Son, to have Ali, you know, out of this Chelsea semi-final on Thursday, probably out of the both legs against Borussia Dortmund. Him and Kane definitely missed the first leg, struggling to make the second leg. If they get through against Chelsea, they'll, you know, they're almost certainly out of the cup final as well against Manchester City. I've supported their decision not to buy players, because I think it's the right thing to do. There's no point wasting money, but maybe now is the time to just give a little bit of injection. You know, they sold Moussa Dembélé, so even if it's just somebody on loan until the end of the season, just to give them a little bit more sort of impetus up front, because, you know, Fernando Llorente had an absolute stinker against Fulham, and if he's not going to step up, and you know, Vincent Janssen completely in the cold under Mauricio Pochettino, maybe that's a wrong move from Pochettino, but you feel like they maybe need to do something, you know, to just make sure they qualify at the very least for the Champions League again next season.
Gary,
do you think they could go for Arnautovic from West Ham? Maybe he seems quite unsettled, doesn't he?
It does seem unsettled. I mean, the kind of money that Arnautovic would want in terms of wages, in terms of transfer fee, at his age, I don't see Tottenham doing that. And there's also a very frosty relationship between West Ham and Tottenham, both at board level and at fan level. I suspect that the linking of Arnautovic to Tottenham was a way of forcing West Ham into selling him to China. Sort of, you know, his brother, who's his agent, probably fed that story out to the newspapers, you know, to say, well, you know, this is the worst case scenario. You don't want him to go to Tottenham. It would be such an unlike Tottenham signing. It would surprise me a lot. I think he's an outstanding player. Could definitely play for, you know, for most of the top six. But I just don't see Tottenham being involved in that battle.
Cesc Fabregas had a pretty decent home debut for Monaco at the weekend, Mark, didn't he?
Well, I mean, we spoke last week about the fact that they managed to play a little bit better and got the draw at Marseille. Then they drew against Patrick Vieira's Nice. Unfortunately for them, they were absolutely hammered 5-1 at home by Strasbourg. They were down to 10 men pretty early, Monaco. Naldo, the experienced centre-half, was sent off. But even so, shouldn't collapse in those kind of circumstances at any time, really. I mean, you know, Thierry Henry, he takes one step forward and then about four back. It's a worrying situation. Definitely, they're still only one place off bottom spot in France. They're actually going quite well in the French Cup competitions. They're in the semi-final of one, and they've got a French Cup tie tonight as well. But, you know, as far as Thierry Henry's concerned, they've just got to stay up. And I think that the one to look out for is whether Batshuayi comes in from Chelsea. There's a big transfer merry-go-round going on at the moment involving a number of teams, and I think that Batshuayi would quite like to go to Monaco. So I think he would be a really good signing for them, because they haven't got much quality up front outside of Radamel Falcao.
Yeah. You're not convinced by Henry, are you?
No, I didn't think he could be worse at anything than his
TV punditry,
but between that and the car ads, this is a Gary Neville job, isn't it?
Yeah, Mark, didn't he slag off one of Strasbourg defenders, Kenny Lala? Didn't he call his mother some horrible insult as well? The pressure seems to be getting to him.
He cursed his nan. It wasn't even his mum, it was his nan. Henry cuts a frustrated figure on the touchline. Every time they miss a chance, he kind of turns back to the bench and sort of, you know, shrugs his shoulders. This is not what he was sold, I don't think, as the man. You know, he went in there as somebody that's a fan favourite, actually well liked around France. I mean, when he first started management, he got in his first game, like all four sides of the stadium stood up and applauded him. I think that there's a lot of goodwill towards Henry to do well as a coach, but I don't think he realised how bad the problems were at Monaco. They have started to spend money because I think they've realised just how, you know, deep the relegation fight is, but there's a lot of off-field issues at the moment involving the president that's making life even more difficult for Henry without what's going on the pitch. So I think it's a good comparison with Gary Neville, because he made a mistake in going into that first job, and it can scar you. And you know, he's never been able to recover from that. You know, if Thierry Henry struggles much more at Monaco, you wonder whether, you know, we may have sort of lost him to management altogether, and he'll be back in the TV studio near you before too too long, unfortunately.
Right, Real Madrid. Real Madrid up to third in La Liga. Goals from Casemiro and from Luka Modric against Sevilla. Left it quite late, Mark. But I suppose what I took from reading the match reports was the fact that each one mentioned the apathy that seems to be around the Bernabeu at the moment and how fans are a bit disenchanted by the season so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's understandable, really, when you're Real Madrid and, you know, your season in La Liga is effectively over already. You know, they're 10 points off Barcelona. I mean, I suppose you never say never, but it's very difficult to see how they can claw that back. So I think that that's probably where the apathy comes from now, that they are definitely going to finish in the top four. So it's just a case whether they can then raise their game for the Champions League, and how often have we seen them stumble through the early stages of the season, be absolutely useless going through the winter months, and then as we turn into spring, all of a sudden Real Madrid become interested again and turn it on for the Champions League. This doesn't look like a Champions League winning team at the moment, but what I would say is that the game against Sevilla was probably their best domestic performance of the season. And you mentioned him right at the top there, Luka Modric. He scored a goal. It was his best performance of the season. And we've been waiting for this from Modric. He's kind of had a few months off since the World Cup. He's been collecting award after award. And I'm not sure that he's been maybe as focused, because there was talk of him leaving in the summer. But it was his best performance, Real Madrid's best performance. So, maybe they can do it again.
Mark, you heard it here first. Is it not just simple math that you take out Ronaldo and 40, 50 goals a season? And you mentioned Harry Kane. Real Madrid will obviously have to do a 200 million job, and Harry Kane goes there in the summer.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm not sure if Real Madrid have got the money. And at the moment, they used to be able to just go and take whoever they wanted from whoever they, you know, needed to, and that would be that. They're trying to invest a lot of money into a stadium redevelopment at the Bernabeu. The TV rights in Spain have been more equally dished out in the last couple of years. So it used to be Real Madrid and Barcelona took virtually the lot, and you know, a lot of the other teams were left just feeding us off scraps. They've taken a more Premier League view, but without the money that the Premier League is able to generate. So in terms of what you'd need to get Harry Kane out of Tottenham, I'm not sure Real Madrid have got that kind of money, and they're going to have to be a bit wiser, a bit cuter in the transfer market. But you're absolutely right, Gary, in terms of the fact that they do need a striker, because, you know, even though they dominated that game against Sevilla, it wasn't until Casemiro, a holding midfielder, you know, broke the deadlock with just under 20 minutes to go, that they managed to find a way through. And of course, Real Madrid over the years have been able to not even play well and win matches because they had Cristiano Ronaldo. Now you've got a stage where, if it's Karim Benzema, Gareth Bale, but these players have all been out injured, they just haven't got that quality up front that Cristiano Ronaldo provides and is providing for Juventus, who are benefiting, although he missed a penalty this week. Ronaldo does that for Juventus now. They don't dominate all games, but then he'll pop up with a late winner, and that's what used to happen at Real Madrid.
Yeah, okay, listen, great stuff, Mark. We've loads more to talk about, but no time to do it, so we'll do it next week. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Cheers. Paul and Sligo says we should do a whip round for Ronaldo. Yeah, God love him. 18 million. He probably said, yeah, do you want it now? I have it in cash here in my pocket if you want. I was surprised there's no mention of a jockey called, I think, Michael Sweeney, who won a race in Cork. He jumped the last fence and nearly fell, got back on the horse, won the race. It was on Sky Sports yesterday. I don't know if RT Sport showed it or not. I saw it. It was Michael Sweeney, Declan Queenie's horse, Ask Heather. And there's a clip going up.
Was it a point follow, to point? Was it?
Was a point to point. Yeah. Killer. Yeah. So if you follow Patrick Mulcahy, he's tweeted it out and it's gotten about 1,000 retweets as well, but it's absolutely amazing.
Unreal. I thought
amazing, and they did talk about it last night, I think, as well, on the show.
I know when Barry Geraghty wrapped himself around Kicking King in the King George,
yeah,
That was good, but this is
incredible.
Different gravy.
Incredible. Billy in Cork says, ask Gary, is he gone from the Daily Mirror, as I haven't seen his golf tips for a while? You're back in February. Little break for you.
But
God love your little hands, typing out.
Taking a little break from the poetry, so back in a couple of weeks.
No pressure, Billy. Hopefully he can deliver for
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Billy.
Offaly, the only team that can stop Dublin for five in a row. We've a good history of doing it. You sure do. You sure do. I tell you, John Mann, it'd be some Lazarus-like if they beat Dublin this year. We'll come back to another question that I have for you, Gary. And someone asking about a question last night you got no answer to. We'll try again. Could you tell me why an Airtel page 234 that's Celtic beating Motherwell in the FA Cup final in 2018 and it's still up on text? Could you tell me why it is not down? RTE have Irish and English Cup final scores. To be honest with you, I didn't even know Airtel was still around. That's not me taking, you know, the mick here. I genuinely didn't think that Airtel was still in operation, so I have no idea. Unfortunately, I can't help you out on that.
Time for a new telly, I think.
51552 is our text number.
This is 2FM. Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Over 100 years, Gillette has stood with men through early mornings, late evenings, and everything in between. Gillette, the best a man can get.
And you're welcome back, Gary, with me in studio. I'm delighted to say we have Nigel Carlin, Connacht attack coach, on the line with us as well. How are you, Nigel?
Very good, Hugh. Thanks.
Good to talk to you again. And congratulations on the new deal, first of all. I suppose the extension of your current contract, yourself and the rest of the team. You must be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, very happy. I mean, we were delighted to get the chance in the first place. And look, we're enjoying it. We're enjoying the way that we're playing. And it's really good to be contributing to that and to get another chance to, you know, to take it a little step further if we can.
I'm really enjoying watching you play. I think everybody who has seen Connacht this season is as well. I mean, I don't want to nail you down and ask you what specific thing, because there seems to be a lot of different factors at play here. But it must be great to be part of a side that plays such attractive rugby, of which you have a huge part to play in, and under a coach that also seems to have really embraced the Connacht way of playing.
Yeah, well, completely. And look, I think it just comes down to, if you're to nail it down to one, it's down to positivity. And I think the positive team certainly plays with their foot on the accelerator, and, you know, maybe a negative team with a foot on the brake. So our guys, you know, it's firmly on the accelerator. It's all, you know, it's all about momentum and tempo, and that's how we train. But I mean, it's certainly Andy has come in and he's facilitated guys taking a chance, expressing themselves. And I said, as coaches, you know, we're just happy to be able to facilitate that as well. It's a great place to coach. It's a nice place to play at the moment, and that positivity, it's actually relaying into some positive results as well.
Was that immediately obvious to you when you met Andy? I mean, did you just get that overwhelming sense of, okay, you know, positivity seems to be the main message here?
Absolutely. You know, and before he came over, we had a couple of conversations on the phone, and, you know, I said, look, he used to be a back himself, and
yeah.
I said, we need to have a conversation about what areas he wants to do and what areas he'd like me to do. And he said, actually, no, I've been watching. He said, I want you to do the whole lot. He said, I'm really happy the way it's going. And you know, from my point of view, I was going, okay, great. Let's embrace this and see how we can mold it. But it's been very much part of the players. They've had a huge input into how we play. We asked them at the start of the year, you know, what did they think, you know, our attack should look like. So they've had huge input and you know, a huge amount of collaboration as a part of that. And it's, you know, as with that comes buy-in. It's theirs. They own it. They enjoy it. You know, they tweak it when we need to tweak it. And I said, it's working out okay so far anyway.
That's a massive show of confidence in you, though, as well, Nigel. You know.
Yeah, I think you got to. I think you look at I trust these players have been around in Connacht as well. As you know, most recently we were getting guys onto the national team at the moment. So
yeah,
you sometimes you just got to sit back and hear what they have to say. They have very strong opinions, and they, you know, and they just want to be heard. But you get payback in terms of when they have that ownership of it, and that's a dream from a coach, is when the players are driving it. It's not, you know, we don't have to say a whole lot, even our reviews. The lads are all over it themselves. They, you know, they can point out to each other where they could do better or where they've done well. And it's great to be able to facilitate that. Yeah, you got to step in once in a while. But as I said, it's very much player-driven. I know it might be cliche-ish, but it's actually, it's created a real positive environment. And as I said, positivity, it just, you know, that mindset, it changes how people actually feel about themselves and how they feel. It gives them energy, and energy allows them to perform. And I said, it's a very basic recipe, but it, you know, it's one that's done us, you know, pretty good stead so far.
Murray Kinsella has done a piece up on the 42 website. I don't know if you read it, but he's just basically trying to explain to casual rugby fans a lot of the reasons behind Connacht's success over the last few months. And he highlights the line-out and the attack off the line-out has been a key area where you've managed to capitalise upon. And 93% success rate in the Pro 14 puts you right up there as the best line-out in the league. And 51% of Connacht's 56 tries this season, he makes the point, have come from that line-out platform. That was an area that you must have identified as attack coach of where you could do damage.
Well, firstly, I sent him a text then later on today when I saw the article. I just said he's exposed all of my secrets now. So
that's it, you're gone, you're finished.
I'll have to tap into something new now. But no, I mean, we haven't changed a whole lot. We've got basic models that we keep tweaking with, and you know, we keep changing the point of attack on them. And I said we rarely change every week. We have a bank or a menu, which, you know, and we ask the lads again, which ones do you want to run this week? And they're very much involved in that. But I said, my role is, I said, it's in some cases, it's the fun part trying to come up with some of these plays. And, you know, you rely on some of the players as well for their input. But it wouldn't work unless, you know, Jimmy Duffy and the work that he does with the forwards can actually produce a line out that gives you a platform to attack off. And I said, generally with Pete, you know, if he wasn't doing his job, like we'd be defending a hell of a lot more. So the work that he does means that he turns the ball over, which means we get more chance to attack, you know. So the three of us are very interdependent on each other. And I said, we definitely depend on each other for our own relative successes. Andy just pulls the whole thing together, you know, and creates that culture. Unfortunately, he has the unenviable job then of having to speak to the players or who's selected and who's not selected then on a Tuesday, which, you know, he wouldn't envy. So
you must be delighted for Jack Carty getting called up to the Ireland squad, and obviously the try that he scored at the weekend as well in Bordeaux. What a win that was, by the way. I mean, people might, you know, Bordeaux Blegg, it mightn't be the European powerhouses of other names in the Champions Cup, but that is not an easy place to go and win.
No, I'm looking at their most recent wins over there against Toulon and Racing, you know, and they were pretty comprehensive. So but we went over full of confidence, having beaten Sale the previous week. And, you know, it's been a pretty good block for us overall. I mean, and, you know, the nine games we've played, we've won seven so far. So, you know, there's bound to be a feeling of confidence in the group. So no matter who we play, we feel that if we could stick to the systems that we have in place, we can, you know, we can produce a performance that can win. But it's very pleasing, and very pleasing for, you know, the likes of Jack and Caelan Blade getting his first call up to the national side. And, you know, I know very often selection is circumstantial, but, you know, we believe in some of the players we have. And, you know, I think Caelan particularly is one of a very underrated player. Jack is a player at the moment who's, you know, bursting with confidence. And I said the try he got at the weekend, some people would have said it was, you know, it was a bit risky, but Jack knew exactly what he was doing. And, you know, and I said even the pace he showed, you know, when he eventually held on to the ball to get in under the sticks, you know, it was remarkable. But he's in a good space, and I said he deserves to be where he is. It was probably a brave call from Joe Smith to make it. But, you know, we believe in Jack. He's been really good for us. Really, really good for us. Not only this year, over the last number of years, but I said this year is just what his confidence has come to the fore.
He seems like he's playing with a truckload of confidence. What's he like off the pitch? I mean,
no, he's a gentleman. Like, I mean, all the kids that have come to the games, he knows all their names.
Really?
You know, he's bringing young guys into the dressing room. It's this guy's birthday. He's an absolute gentleman. I said, with his mom and dad, Ted and Susan, said, you know, obviously the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. He's a true gentleman. And I said he deserves everything he gets.
Okay, well, look, I mean, you've got Sale coming up, by the way, once again. After Murray's expose and the fact that you played them all already twice, you're going to have to do a complete root and branch reform on the attack, Nigel.
Well, we were doing a scout on Sale actually last time, so they actually ran one of our plays against Saracens when they beat Saracens a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, coaching is very much, we're all magpies, we all borrow little ideas from each other, and, you know, it's just the bragging rights of when one of them... when you can pull one of them out of the bag, on any given day, it works a treat.
Okay, well, look, you've been brilliant with your time. Best of luck for the rest of the season, and it's great news about the contracts for you and the whole coaching team, as I said, and continued success. Thanks, Nigel. Appreciate it.
Great, thanks.
Cheers, thanks a lot. Nigel Carlin, Connacht attack coach, and what a season they're having. It's brilliant. Great win for Shane Lowry. The outpouring of delight after his win is further proof to me that no matter what Rory McIlroy wins. Rory will just about be admired by the Irish golf public, but Shane Lowry is loved by the golfing fans, and good on him, says Sean in Rexford. We're going to talk about Shane in just a second.
Let's go.
This is 2FM. Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New Skin Guard Sensitive with unique Skin Guard technology, taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Say bye to shave irritation. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Over 100 years, Gillette has stood with men through early mornings, late evenings and everything in between. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Greg Allen has joined Gary and I in the studio. You're welcome, Greg, as always.
Thank you, Hugh.
What a win that was.
That's great, yeah.
Huh?
Well, the man here had a box seat, you know.
Yeah,
so what can I say? My box seat was on my couch for 4.5 hours on Sunday morning, and I wouldn't swap it because it was brilliant. But I
was following you on Twitter. Yeah. That was because I was actually travelling at the time, I couldn't see you. And I was like, come on, Greg, keep me posted. And then he would go for like 10 minutes without tweeting. I'm like, for God's sake.
I tweeted everything that I thought was significant. I didn't tweet every single shot.
I had my fingers crossed for him so much last week, and I mentioned this to you, like, you know, last week we got a kind of text and saying, oh, you didn't go mad when he shot 62 the opening round, but there have been a few false dawns as far as Shane's concerned in terms of bursting into the blocks in a tournament where it then has levelled off and he hasn't quite got over the line, and particularly last season. And I didn't want this to be another one of those. And how hard is it to go out and shoot that 62, have the target on your back, and over the 4 days, the mental strain, the physical toll that it takes, that you're the guy everyone has to beat over 4 days?
Well, I thought the most impressive thing that he did, or among the most impressive things he did, was come back after bogeying two of the first three holes of round two to shoot around a 70. I think he covered the back nine in 32. It could easily have been a 74 when you start off with two drop shots in the first three holes and you realise that the magic of the day before isn't there. But he knuckled down and grounded out, and this was to be the trademark of what he did. The third round, 67, was really good. It was a joint best round of the day. But we all know what really was the most impressive thing of all, which was seeing his lead of three shots evaporate after three holes, seeing himself four behind after 11. And then suddenly, you know, at that point, Richard Stirney was now the pursued rather than the pursuer. Changes the psyche completely in terms of how you go about your business. Mm. And Stirney obviously stalled. And just enough of a chink of light with his par three brilliance of the week, the birdie on 12, followed by the 20-footer on 13. And suddenly he was back in it. And it just took a sniff. But
it was a good story about that birdie on 12, because, which he said in the hospitality afterwards, Bo got him to hit that putt in practice on the Tuesday, because it was a Wednesday start, and he saw the putt being right to left, and it's actually a left to right putt, so that putt on 12. So
his initial read of that exact putt was the opposite of how it actually broke.
It looks the other way. It looks right to left. Yeah, it goes left to right. So that was just good homework, and that's where a good caddy can make the difference. And that putt on 12 was huge,
it was huge.
Set him up for 13.
Interesting that he went to the mental locker room and said, okay, you know, US Open, I've been here before. Have I learned the lessons of that? Have I learned the lessons that really affected him? And he spoke about this in the aftermath of his final round of the win. He said, look, that really affected me. And maybe I haven't been as open with you guys. Yeah. But that haunted him.
No doubt.
He had to go to that locker room again and say, all right, what have you got here, Shane? Yeah. What are we doing?
What happened at the US Open, and obviously I was there, and it was horrible to watch what happened over the last five holes, but it was fantastic to watch what happened over the first 63-ish holes, which was Shane in that zone, which we've seen Shane attain when he won the World Golf Championship event in Akron, Ohio in 2015. That back nine, people might remember the back nine in Akron, Ohio, birdie the 10th from the trees, birdie the 18th from the trees, and made this incredible up and down on the 14th, where it was just, he was in such trouble that he had to lay up and pitch from 80 yards to 20 feet, and he had to pitch to 20 feet because going at the pin, he couldn't have stopped the ball. It was really smart, and he just got it going. It just proved to me that when Shane is in the zone mentally, he is one of the best, potentially best players in a field in a major, because he likes tough competition. What happened at the US Open was it just unsettled him. The way that the whole back nine began to unravel, he didn't get off to a brilliant start, but he was okay. But the last five holes. He didn't really think that he was in contention, even though he was only one behind. He was actually level because of the penalty that Dustin Johnson suffered.
So it was purely mental.
It was purely mental. He was only one behind, but he didn't feel like he was going to win. And it's all about the feeling. You know that more.
I think when you have a four-shot lead like that, going out and you lose it, you know, you feel your way, even though you're only one back, it probably feels like you're four or five back. And that's, I just think he was a lot more aggressive in the final round coming down the stretch. Now, I know he was chasing, but he didn't seem, and he did learn his lesson. I mean, this is the whole thing. It's trying to get in the zone. You know, how do you get in the zone? Nobody really knows. Because if you knew, you'd be in it every week and you'd win seven or eight times a year. But that's the challenge for all these players. But to lose his full-time status on the PGA Tour, to come back, have a good end of season, to come out in the first event, like a huge Rolex Series event.
And that field as well, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson. Yeah. You know, this is not a weak field. No disrespect to the European Tour, but it's not a weak field, even, you know, by any standards.
48 world ranking points, you know. Yeah, it was a bigger amount of world ranking points than there was for the Desert Classic on the PGA Tour. They hit it 42. So it was a stronger field than the event on in the PGA Tour coinciding with it. Just going back to the US Open, there's one thing you have to remember. Shane completed his third round, morning of the final day. He had to get up, and he had gone to bed the previous night at about 11 and had to be up at about 5. He got his minimum or maximum 6 hours in bed, probably minimum 4 or 5 hours sleep. And then he had to hang around for 6 hours, not knowing whether to go to bed, to rest, or for 6 hours, knowing he had a four-shot lead going into the final round. Yeah. And it was just not the way to prepare for a final round for anyone, especially a rookie in that situation, you know. So there were a lot of reasons why the US Open didn't work out for him, unluckily, because they had the rain delays. So I think you have to put that in his locker as well. But look at the four events that Shane has now won. Irish Open, obviously, he would have won €500,000 if he could have picked up the check, but he was an amateur. He couldn't. It was a big event with a good field. Mm-hmm. The Portuguese Masters, a middle-ranking event on the European Tour, but certainly one of the better middle-ranking events in the European Tour. World Golf Championship and Rolex Series event in Abu Dhabi. When he wins good. He wins in good fields and often on tough courses. And this is why I think the way he won, losing the lead and then finding himself four behind, finding something special, covering the last seven holes and three under, and that bullet of a three wood from 281 yards on the 18th to 30 feet, what a shot that was.
So look, just to go back into this, right, so Shane now knows that when he has to go deep into a locker room and try and find something, that he can do it, right, when the chips are down, when it doesn't seem like anything is happening for him. And it was a short space of time, in the space of an hour, he'd gone from, what was it, 3-shot lead to four behind. It's a massive swing. He's going to go qualify for the Masters now. He can play pretty much any tournament that he wants without having his PGA card, so to speak. But he's top 50 in the world, but gets into all the big tournaments.
He'll get PGA Tour event invites if
he wants to do it. Yeah. But I mean, if he finds himself again in a position like that, he knows that it's there. And is that not the biggest thing that he can take from that?
Yeah, it is, because that's why the US Open loss, I reckon, and he's never told me this personally, but I'm just surmising that it would have taken a huge amount out of him. And you do lose that belief, and then it was totally compounded by the front nine. Even though he didn't do a whole lot wrong on the front nine, he really only hit one bad shot. And obviously, Sterney.
But just watching Sterney go birdie, birdie, birdie.
But his body language was so much better. When he hit that trough, his body language, to me, looking at him, he wasn't hard on himself. He wasn't getting that down.
Gary, how important was Bo on the bag? I mean, because I spoke to him on Saturday night, and I asked him, having Bo in the bag, what was the difference? Because he actually said that I needed Bo to keep me in it, and I told him beforehand there'll be times when I need you to talk to me. And Bo, obviously, you know Bo quite well, Brian Martin quite well.
There's no problem talking to anyone.
No, but he is that kind of character. He has that sort of intelligence to know when to say the right thing at the right time.
He does, and he's a very positive, upbeat character as well. But it's not positive in a patronising sense, because when you're down on the course and it's not going your way, someone being upbeat for the sake of it, it sounds
irritating.
Yeah, and you just want to knock him clean out. But I think he deserves a lot of credit. And it's a new relationship as well. They're only 9 tournaments into it. And to get a win of this magnitude is great for Shane going forward. You know, it's not, I don't want to talk about Ryder Cup because it's a long way off, and it's, you know, I think it's more important for him to focus on trying to back it up this week. Just stay in the moment every week. That's what Tiger Woods has done, but greater than anyone in the modern generation. Just be hungry to get in the mix somewhere on Sunday, and that's what he has to strive for, and just be more consistent, because we know, and he's proven, as Greg alluded to, those huge victories he's had, but just to have a more, not that he doesn't want it, because he does want it, because people, like, Shane's in the gym every day, at least once a day, if not
twice. He said
he's
done more work in the gym in the last month than he's ever done in pre-season.
And at times the TV is horrendous, because it puts on, you know, if guys are a certain shape, they just look a lot heavier than what they are.
That's our excuse, like, Gary.
I actually look overweight in TV. It's ridiculous.
I know. But, what the hell? How many cameras are actually on you?
But, you know, so he's like Darren Clark in a lot of ways.
Strong guy, big
strong guy. Strong guy, big guy. He's never going to be skinny, but works very hard on the right things. And you have to give Neil Manship, his coach, a huge amount of credit as well. It'd be so easy to change certain things with Shane, and they have not done that. It works. He just has to get a little more consistent.
Look, he's not a whole lot different to the shape that Colin Montgomery was in for most of the best of his career. And Shane, beneath,
better shape.
You know, well, one of the things you can definitely say, Shane's a real athlete. He's very supple. He's a proper athlete. And if anybody says to me, just because he mightn't have the white belt, narrow 32-inch waist that Darren Clark once got down to amazingly.
It doesn't mean
anything at the age that Shane is at, but it might mean something in 10 years' time. But at the age he's at now, you know, he's fit enough for what he needs to do. But this is the other thing, that when Monty lost weight and went on a program, he got out of sync with his swing and couldn't find what it was that gave him that beautiful rhythm. And what does Shane have? A beautiful rhythm. Mm-hmm. He was being compared by Ewan Murray and Sky to Christy O'Connor Sr. I think it was Christy that he was being compared to. And there's an awful lot of that fluidity. It's an old-fashioned action that he has, almost old-fashioned.
Lovely to watch.
Well, it's lovely to watch. You know, the funny thing is, for a big guy, he actually doesn't hit it as far as I thought. He was out hit by 20 yards by Richard Sterney.
Sterney's long, though.
He is long. Compact.
He's got all those muscles he's got.
He's long enough. His length is fine. He's
a 300-yard hitter. He's in that sort of range.
And a little bit. But when you have a short game, like, yes, mother.
What about that 3-wood into 18? Do you know what it reminded me of? A Mr. P. Harrington.
His five wood in Birkdale.
Not quite the same club, but similar kind of pressure,
I actually think the drive was a much better shot.
Like he'd
hit no fairways. That is so tight because
he had to hit that fairway.
But it's easy, just sneak it a little bit into the rough, and it's a bit of a layup. Sterney's maybe in the fairway, he's on the green, you're laying up. So to have the honour and put that in the fairway, hit that little peel off fade he hit, was a fantastic shot. Now the 3-wood is amazing too, but the drive set it all.
Yeah, credit to the 2-putt from 20 yards on 16, wriggling in a 5-footer, and the up and down on 17, where he was short-sighted and had no shot and hold the putt from 12 feet.
He
backed it all up with the way he played 18. He did what he had to do when he needed to do it, and he showed real grit.
He's great, Larry. He's box office. I mean, he's so relatable. He really is.
He is.
And he's been around a long time. He's won a lot of money, and like, I remember when he first came out on tour after he won the Irish Open. And he's very similar. Like, he hasn't changed at all. He's got a new set of teeth and a beard, but...
Yeah.
You know, he's very grounded, and
he's great.
I think that's credit to his mum and dad, to be honest.
Absolutely. Okay, just a couple other stories then. Adam Long, I mean, like, this is... talk about a wing and a prayer and a dream come true. This guy... handful of appearances on the PGA Tour, and I mean literally
six.
So a handful if you're a witch. Right, and he goes out and he takes down one of the all time greats at the weekend and wins from Phil Mickelson. I mean, this is just fairy tale stuff.
Great. Yeah, I got so bored watching the burnt out dormant grass wide open ballpark golf course event. But yeah, look, you know, world number 417 wins in a 6 PGA Tour start, it's a dream come true when you beat Phil Mickelson, you birdie the final hole from 14 feet, all of those things. Might be remembered that Graham McDowell won in his fourth start on the European Tour and his sixth start as a professional, two Challenge Tour, you know, so, you know, it has been done. It'll be done Phil Mickelson won a PGA Tour event as an amateur. Yeah. So, you know, talent is something which will always win if you've got it. And he used, what, 26 under par when he won? So
I have to say,
but it was a soulless event to watch.
Greg, I watched the highlights of it back again. I had seen bits of it, whatever, Phil Mickelson, whatever like that. And soulless is right. So you have guys just bombing it down. Phil Mickelson hitting like flop shot wedge, like lob wedges into the greens for most of the par fours and getting within 10 and just knocking the putt in. There's nothing to this. What, they're destroying the game with golf courses like that over there. And if that's the PGA Tour now, which it is, it's a bomber's paradise with no creativity, no kind of cause for invention or shot making. It's just how far can you hit it, who can hold a putt. Is that really what you want?
Well, no. this week in San Diego will be a bomber's paradise, but it'll be different.
Different, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be serious rough. They're going to have a problem this week. Why do you think Phil Mickelson is missing? You
know, yeah.
He doesn't like memories of Paris. And he's a decent record around there.
Yeah, he has, yeah.
But Tiger's back, so that's all that matters on the PGA.
It's a great field for San Diego. Fantastic field. Ram, Day, Rose, Rory.
Fantastic.
Xander. Good old
Xander Schauffele, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He won that opening tournament, didn't he? The final round, 61 or 2, was it? 62?
Yeah,
course record?
62, yeah. 61? 60 par.
One of the two, anyway.
61.
Hugh says Shane finished the year well. He had form coming in. You could see in his body language when he dropped shots it didn't bother him. He's a serious backroom team there with Neil and Robbie. Bo has put the cream on it. Thanks for that, Hugh. Willie says, lads, he's just a gem. Yeah, he is, and he's so popular as a result. Somebody who's not so popular is Matt Kuchar, and I want to come back to the story. We briefly discussed it myself, Greg and I, last week, and Gary, and I want to get your thoughts on this because Brandel Chamblee has been writing about it. To make a long story short, Matt Kuchar went to Mexico, played in a PGA Tour event, won over $1 million, hired a local caddy, and a story appeared a couple of weeks ago that suggested that he paid him $3,000 for winning the event, not the 10% that normally comes with a winning golfer if you're a caddy. And at the time he was asked about it by a golf journalist, he said it's not a story, but refused to say how much he did actually pay the caddy in question. Now it turns out it's closer to $5,000, when the caddy could have been paid his 10% bonus, which would be over $100,000 and change his life. Brandon Chamblee is sticking up for Matt Kuchar, saying, look, he does a lot of stuff for charity, and this guy, they agreed the fee beforehand.
not in Mexico, though.
No, they agreed the fee beforehand, and you know what? Relative to most Mexicans, this guy had a pretty good payday. What's your own view on this, Gary?
Oh, it's appalling. The biggest check, it wasn't the best finish I ever had on tour, but the biggest check I ever had on tour, I gave my caddy 10%, and I wasn't in the top three, so I don't understand it. I was always probably not over generous, but I respected the role that the caddy played in me having a good week and doing well. A lot of the times when they say nothing, they say everything, and to have what, 45 million in career money, you can easily stick another minimum 20 on top of that. To hand a guy $5,000 is just goes to show why he's a prolific money earner, and he's not a
major winner.
A major winner and a multiple winner, because he's a phenomenal golf game. But it's just like, it really beggars belief, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, we used to have it the whole time when we went down to play in South Africa. It was always a problem with the local caddies. There was always aggro, and I always paid them European Tour wages, which was probably at the time.
You say a problem because players weren't paying them properly.
Like, you could get a local caddy down there for probably $300-400 for the week in wages plus percentage, and you just agree a price. But I just always pay them
the European going rate.
Yeah, because you're writing it off against your tax anyway, so it's not money that you're going to have in your pocket. It's left a sour taste.
There have been a couple of people, no story,
because it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's wrong. And I'm surprised at Brandel Chamblee, because I enjoy a lot of his commentary. I think he's very knowledgeable. I just think this time, I think he's trying to sit on the other side of the fence for the sake.
I think so too, because his article made no sense to me. At the end of it was like, I want more evidence, but yet 90% of his article is based on no evidence whatsoever. It's his view on what he thinks happened and putting it into context that don't actually measure up at all. I mean, look, it's left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth. I just wanted to finish it off. We probably won't talk about it again, but because Brandel wrote the article, Greg, I thought it was worth it.
I think 5% would have been okay, because it would still have been 50 or 60 grand, and it would have been what you would pay a substitute caddy who comes in to do the job of your regular caddy. Your regular caddy...
You pay him full whack.
Even Tom Gillis, the guy who was the whistleblower on all this, accepted that 5% would have been an acceptable scenario. it's still a big paycheck, but the 10%... I'm not trying to deny anybody.
Five grand out of an over $1 million paycheck is just... 1.25. It's scandalous. 1.25. It's scandalous. I can't measure that.
It's like walking past a homeless person on the street and giving them a cent.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like,
why do it?
I'd rather if he hadn't given him the 5 grand. Don't give him anything. If we're going to insult him that much, don't even give him any.
The only thing in this as well, I'm a bit unnerved about being trialled by social media again, which is a different argument in one respect because of the fact that there is a core issue here which needs to be sort of outed.
Absolutely,
but outed this way, it's a reputation shredder for Matt Kuchar, and
it's a shredder.
And social media has done that in cases where, you know, it's resulted in people's reputation not being rehabilitated.
Castagno and Simon Dyson.
Simon Dyson, what was the thing? The new rules, whatever. I can't get this. One of the golfers said, I can't get this into my head. I'm able to tap down things. Simon Dyson's been doing it for 20 years. Anyway, look, that's another conversation. We're out of time, guys, as we always are. Pleasure. Greg, Gary, thanks a million. Andrew O'Connor produced tonight, and we are back tomorrow. Stay tuned. Louise is on the way after these.
Let's go.
This is 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Skin Guard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop skin irritation. Revolutionary technology taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Gillette, the best a man can get.